Chapter 28 relates what became of Oliver Twist after he had been claimed by Nancy. The narrow streets and courts, at length, terminated in a large open space, scattered about which were pens for beasts and other indications of a cattle market. Sykes slackened his pace when they reached this spot. The girl being quite unable to support any longer the rapid rate at which they had hitherto walked, turning to Oliver, he roughly commanded him to take hold of Nancy's hand. "Do you hear?" growled Sykes, as Oliver hesitated and looked round. They were in a dark corner, quite out of the track of passengers. Oliver saw, but too plainly, that resistance would be of no avail. He held out his hand, which Nancy clasped tight in hers. "Give me the other," said Sykes, seizing Oliver's unoccupied hand. "Here, bullseye." The dog looked up and growled. "See here, boy," said Sykes, putting his other hand to Oliver's throat. "If he speaks ever so soft a word, hold him. D'ye mind?" The dog growled again, and licking his lips, eyed Oliver as if he were anxious to attach himself to his windpipe without delay. "He's as willing as a Christian, strike me blind if he isn't," said Sykes, regarding the animal with a kind of grim and ferocious approval. "Now, you know what you've got to expect, master, so call away as quick as you like. The dog will soon stop that game. Get on, youngin." Bullseye wagged his tail in acknowledgement of this unusually endearing form of speech, and, giving vent to another admonitory growl for the benefit of Oliver, led the way onward. It was Smithfield that they were crossing, although it might have been Grosvenor Square, for anything Oliver knew to the contrary. The night was dark and foggy. The lights in the shops could scarcely struggle through the heavy mist, which thickened every moment, and shrouded the streets and houses in gloom, rendering the strange place still stranger in Oliver's eyes, and making his uncertainty the more dismal and depressing. They had hurried on a few paces, when a deep church bell struck the hour. With its first stroke, his two conductors stopped, and turned their heads in the direction whence the sound proceeded. 8 o'clock, Bill," said Nancy, when the bell ceased. "What's the good of telling me that? I can hear it, can't I?" replied Sykes. "I wonder whether they can hear it," said Nancy. "Of course they can," replied Sykes. "It was Bartlemy time when I was shopped, and there weren't a penny trumpet in the fair, as I couldn't hear the squeaking on. Arter I was locked up for the night, the row and din outside made the thundering old jail so silent that I could almost have beat my brains out against the iron plates of the door. Poor fellow," said Nancy, who still had her face turned towards the quarter in which the bell had sounded. "Oh, Bill, such fine young chaps as them." "Yes, that's all you women think of," answered Sykes. "Fine young chaps. Well, they're as good as dead, so it don't much matter." With this consolation, Mr. Sykes appeared to repress a rising tendency to jealousy, and, clasping Oliver's wrist more firmly, told him to step out again. "Wait a minute," said the girl. "I wouldn't hurry by, if it was you that was coming out to be hung, the next time 8 o'clock struck, Bill. I'd walk round and round the place till I dropped, if the snow was on the ground, and I hadn't a shawl to cover me. And what good would that do?" Inquired the unsentimental Mr. Sykes. "Unless you could pitch over a file and 20 yards of good stout rope, you might as well be walking 50 mile off, or not walking at all, for all the good it would do me. Come on, and don't stand preaching there." The girl burst into a laugh, drew her shawl more closely round her, and they walked away. But Oliver felt her hand tremble, and, looking up in her face as they passed a gas lamp, saw that it had turned a deadly white. They walked on, by little frequented and dirty ways, for a full half hour, meeting very few people, and those appearing from their looks to hold much the same position in society as Mr. Sykes himself. At length they turned into a very filthy narrow street, nearly full of old clothes shops, the dog running forward, as if conscious that there was no further occasion for his keeping on guard, stopped before the door of a shop that was closed and apparently untenanted. The house was in a ruinous condition, and on the door was nailed a board, intimating that it was to let, which looked as if it had hung there for many years. "All right," apostrophe cried Sykes, glancing cautiously about. Nancy stooped below the shutters, and Oliver heard the sound of a bell. They crossed to the opposite side of the street, and stood for a few moments under a lamp. A noise, as if a sash window were gently raised, was heard, and soon afterwards the door softly opened. Mr. Sykes then seized the terrified boy by the collar with very little ceremony, and all three were quickly inside the house. The passage was perfectly dark. They waited, while the person who had let them in, chained and barred the door. "Anybody here?" apostrophe apostrophe inquired Sykes. "No," apostrophe replied a voice, which Oliver thought he had heard before. "Is the old un here?" apostrophe apostrophe asked the robber. "Yes," apostrophe replied the voice, "and precious down in the mouth he has been. Won't he be glad to see you?" "Oh, no," apostrophe, the style of this reply, as well as the voice which delivered it, seemed familiar to Oliver's ears. But it was impossible to distinguish even the form of the speaker in the darkness. "Let's have a glim," apostrophe said Sykes, "or we shall go breaking our necks, or treading on the dog. Look after your legs if you do." Apostrophe, "stand still a moment, and I'll get you one," apostrophe replied the voice. The receding footsteps of the speaker were heard, and, in another minute, the form of Mr. John Dawkins, otherwise the Artful Dodger, appeared. He bore in his right hand a tallow candle stuck in the end of a cleft stick. The young gentleman did not stop to bestow any other mark of recognition upon Oliver than a humorous grin, but, turning away, beckoned the visitors to follow him down a flight of stairs. They crossed an empty kitchen, and, opening the door of a low earthy-smelling room, which seemed to have been built in a small backyard, were received with a shout of laughter. "Oh, my wig, my wig!" apostrophe apostrophe cried Master Charles Bates, from whose lungs the laughter had proceeded. "Here he is, oh, cry, here he is! Oh, Fagin, look at him! Fagin, do look at him! I can't bear it! It is such a jolly game, I can't bear it. Hold me, somebody, while I laugh it out." Apostrophe, with this irrepressible ebullition of mirth, Master Bates laid himself flat on the floor, and kicked convulsively for 5 minutes, in an ecstasy of facetious joy. Then jumping to his feet, he snatched the cleft stick from the dodger, and, advancing to Oliver, viewed him round and round, while the Jew, taking off his nightcap, made a great number of low bows to the bewildered boy. The Artful, meantime, who was of a rather saturnine disposition, and seldom gave way to merriment when it interfered with business, rifled Oliver's pockets with steady assiduity. "Look at his togs, Fagin!" apostrophe apostrophe said Charlie, putting the light so close to his new jacket as nearly to set him on fire. "Look at his togs. Superfine cloth, and the heavy swell cut. Oh, my eye, what a game! And his books too. Nothing but a gentleman, Fagin. Apostrophe apostrophe, delighted to see you looking so well, my dear," apostrophe said the Jew, bowing with mock humility. "The Artful shall give you another suit, my dear, for fear you should spoil that Sunday one. Why didn't you write, my dear, and say you were coming? We'd have got something warm for supper." Apostrophe, at his, Master Bates roared again. So loud, that Fagin himself relaxed, and even the Dodger smiled. But as the Artful drew forth the £5 note at that instant, it is doubtful whether the sally of the discovery awakened his merriment. Hello, what's that? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired Sykes, stepping forward as the Jew seized the note. That's mine, Fagin. Apostrophe, no, no, my dear, apostrophe said the Jew. Mine, Bill, mine. You shall have the books. Apostrophe, if that ain't mine. Apostrophe apostrophe said Bill Sykes, putting on his hat with a determined air. Mine and Nancy's, that is. I'll take the boy back again. Apostrophe, the Jew started. Oliver started too, though from a very different cause, for he hoped that the dispute might really end in his being taken back. Come. Hand over, will you? Apostrophe said Sykes. This is hardly fair, Bill. Hardly fair, is it, Nancy? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired the Jew. Fair or not fair, apostrophe retorted Sykes. Hand over, I tell you. Do you think Nancy and me has got nothing else to do with our precious time but to spend it in scouting ardor and kidnapping every young boy as gets grabbed through you? Give it here, you avaricious old skeleton. Give it here. Apostrophe apostrophe, with this gentle remonstrance, Mr. Sykes plucked the note from between the Jew's finger and thumb, and looking the old man coolly in the face, folded it up small, and tied it in his neckerchief. That's for our share of the trouble, apostrophe said Sykes, and not half enough, neither. You may keep the books, if you're fond of reading. If you ain't, sell 'em. Apostrophe, they're very pretty, apostrophe said Charlie Bates, who, with sundry grimaces, had been affecting to read one of the volumes in question. Beautiful writing, isn't it, Oliver? Apostrophe apostrophe at sight of the dismayed look with which Oliver regarded his tormentors, Master Bates, who was blessed with a lively sense of the ludicrous, fell into another ecstasy, more boisterous than the first. They belong to the old gentleman, apostrophe said Oliver, wringing his hands, to the good, kind, old gentleman who took me into his house, and had me nursed, when I was near dying of the fever. Oh, pray send him back the books and money. Keep me here all my life long, but pray, pray send them back. He'll think I stole them, the old lady, all of them who were so kind to me, will think I stole them. Oh, do have mercy upon me, and send them back. Apostrophe apostrophe, with these words, which were uttered with all the energy of passionate grief, Oliver fell upon his knees at the Jew's feet, and beat his hands together, in perfect desperation. The boy's right, apostrophe remarked Fagin, looking covertly round, and knitting his shaggy eyebrows into a hard knot. You're right, Oliver, you're right, they will think you have stolen them. Ha, ha! Apostrophe apostrophe chuckled the Jew, rubbing his hands, it couldn't have happened better if we had chosen our time. Apostrophe apostrophe, of course it couldn't, apostrophe replied Sykes. I know that, directly I see him coming through Clerkenwell, with the books under his arm. It's all right enough. They're soft-hearted psalm singers, or they wouldn't have taken him in at all. And they'll ask no questions after him, fear they should be obliged to prosecute, and so get him lagged. He's safe enough. Apostrophe, Oliver had looked from one to the other, while these words were being spoken, as if he were bewildered, and could scarcely understand what passed, but when Bill Sykes concluded, he jumped suddenly to his feet, and tore wildly from the room, uttering shrieks for help, which made the bare old house echo to the roof. Keep back the dog, Bill! Apostrophe apostrophe cried Nancy, springing before the door, and closing it, as the Jew and his two pupils darted out in pursuit. Keep back the dog! He'll tear the boy to pieces! Apostrophe, serve him right! Apostrophe apostrophe cried Sykes, struggling to disengage himself from the girl's grasp. Stand off from me, or I'll split your head against the wall. Apostrophe, I don't care for that, Bill, I don't care for that, apostrophe screamed the girl, struggling violently with the man. The child shan't be torn down by the dog, unless you kill me first. Apostrophe, shan't he? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Sykes, setting his teeth. I'll soon do that, if you don't keep off. apostrophe, the housebreaker flung the girl from him to the further end of the room, just as the Jew and the two boys returned, dragging Oliver among them. What's the matter here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Fagin, looking round. The girl's gone mad, I think, apostrophe, replied Sykes, savagely. No, she hasn't, apostrophe, said Nancy, pale and breathless from the scuffle. No, she hasn't, Fagin, don't think it. Apostrophe, then keep quiet, will you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the Jew, with a threatening look. No, I won't do that, neither, apostrophe, replied Nancy, speaking very loud. Come. What do you think of that? Apostrophe, Mr. Fagin was sufficiently well acquainted with the manners and customs of that particular species of humanity to which Nancy belonged, to feel tolerably certain that it would be rather unsafe to prolong any conversation with her at present. With the view of diverting the attention of the company, he turned to Oliver. So you wanted to get away, my dear, did you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the Jew, taking up a jagged and knotted club which lay in a corner of the fireplace. Eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Oliver made no reply. But he watched the Jew's motions, and breathed quickly. Wanted to get assistance. Called for the police. Did you? Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.